And welcome to the program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Your Sunday place for a little political gospel, some common sense, and look, we here are not about harming the innocent millennials out there who are lost and wandering. This is a place where we gather the lost sheep, and well, just know, be careful. You got to come here with an open mind. This is not a college campus. This is not a safe zone. We are going to just analyze things based on the facts. And we don't really believe in microaggressions here. That's for sure. So prepare to be uncoddled, if coddling is what you're used to. So, well, I was in the Bay. Yeah, I was. I was in San Francisco. I talked about this yesterday. Speaking of being coddled, where I think half the population is, you know, is somewhere between man-child and, you know, and millennial, depending on their age bracket. So I'm in San Francisco on work, and I'm packing my overnight bag. And I don't know about you, but I pack in such a hurry. I really do. I pack in such a hurry. So I open my sock drawer. I'm ready to just grab a pair of socks for the next day. And lo, in front of me, a beautiful, crisp pair of my Donald Trump socks. Yeah, someone gave me these great socks that on the front of my, how do I describe this? You put the sock on, and on the front of my shin, and on the back, on the opposite side, is a giant picture of Donald Trump with his mouth open. It's a very obnoxious-looking picture of Donald Trump. And then it's got the, you know, flag stripes and some you know, white stars. Kind of very, you know, it's very American with Donald Trump right there on his on. Anyway, I thought, this is it. I have to pack these socks. I've got to wear these in San Francisco tomorrow. I'm just going to antagonize the hell out of everybody. And that is exactly what I did. That's exactly what I did. In fact, I got a picture. We'll put it up on Instagram. At Sam Nation is our handle, our account on Instagram. Please, yeah, we'll post it here in a few minutes. Get that up. So, okay, so I'm there. I'm in San Francisco. I'm wearing the Trump socks. And no, I didn't get stabbed or anything, but I got two compliments. And for what it's worth, they're both Hispanic guys. They're like, I love your socks. Those are awesome. And I don't, you know, maybe they thought it was, you know, that it was a kind of a criticism, but they were so excited about my, I think they were Trump fans because they came up to me all kind of like quiet, like on the sly. You know, they're just like, hey, I like those socks. So go figure. I don't know. It's just anecdotal. It is what it is, but, well, that's true. And they could have been flirting, but, you know, I don't know if I was the kind of guy they want to bring home to mother if I'm wearing Trump socks. Don't know. Anyway, so, speaking of Donald Trump, you know, everybody's all over him for wading into this minimum wage deal. So So Trump, what does he do? He's asked about the minimum wage, and before the big vote in Indiana, before he locked up the election, and before Cruz dropped out, he really was against raising the minimum wage. That's all he said. I'm against raising the minimum wage. And then the next thing that I hear is him saying something to the effect of, well, I'm not, who can live on $7, $8 an hour? Now, I'm not opposed to looking at it and possibly raising it. And the political world had conniption fits. I mean, they got the vapors, right? I mean, they're having fainting fits over this flip-flop is what they were calling it, this flip-flop. And so I had to go back to the source and look to see kind of, is that really what he said? Did he really flip-flop, or was there some substance to it? And, you know, and as always, it's never the full quote, right? They always cut the end of the quote. And the end of the quote, there was more to it. And I'll read it to you. So the first part of it is, I don't know how you live on $7.25 an hour, you know. But then he goes, he adds to it, and I'm talking to Donald Trump. Quote, I like the idea of let the states decide. But I think people should get more. I think they're out there. They're working. It's a very low number. And I'm reading that, and I think, yeah, so, you know, that's, he's really pandering. He's pandering to some Democrats out there who are big on this minimum wage thing, which, you know, we've always talked about addressing it. I might just, this show, address this whole minimum wage thing and give you the power to debunk all these libs out there that think this is a great thing. I might get into it, so stay tuned. But anyway, so Trump here says no, and I'm thinking, look, let the states decide. To me, whenever I hear that, to some extent, I think it's a cop out, because it's true that I don't disagree. I'm a federalist. I believe that states ought to control more than the federal government. I think the federal government should stay out of pretty much anything and everything that it possibly can. But I also think that a political candidate has to be able to say, this is what I believe. I mean, even if it's in an area that he or she maybe shouldn't influence legislatively, they ought to have an opinion, and their political orientation on the subject is important to me. So I, for example, strongly disagree with the entire premise of a minimum wage. And so when I hear a candidate who I might be considering even voting for get up and say, yeah, you know, I'm all for this, and who can live on $7-$8 an hour, and I'm all about raising it, but yeah, man, let the states decide. To me, that's equivocal. And I don't like it. But then the Trumpster continues. When asked if the federal government should set a floor, no, I'd rather have the states go out and do what they have to do. Adding, and the states compete with each other, not only other countries, but they compete with each other. And that's the moment where I read this in this Forbes article, and I threw it down and I said, yes, yes, hallelujah, yes. Because that, to me, there shows some glimmer of hope that Trump gets it. So the reason I'll explain it to you. It's very simple. His explanation of why he would let states decide is exactly what I like about federalism. Okay? Have you been to New Jersey? It's a perennially effed up state. I'm sorry. If you're from New Jersey, if I'm offending you, your state's messed up, and I shouldn't even pick on your state. I'll start with my state, California. This place, do I even need to? I don't. But if you don't like California, if you don't like paying an insane state income tax, you know what you can do? That's right. You can move to Nevada. And while you may give up surfing and oceanfront land and all that good stuff, you are going to have what? You're going to have no income tax and public schools that are well-funded and all this good stuff. Okay, so we're talking about the minimum wage and what Donald Trump said here about it. I'm just explaining to you why what he said about states' decisions is good. What he said here, he said, and the states compete with each other. And the idea behind it is that, look, let's say one state sets a minimum wage like California has now at $15 an hour. Well, the state next door can go, that's not good. We're going to set a lower minimum wage and hope to attract the businesses and jobs that are leaving California. It's state shopping. Yeah, you know, like It's like what you do when you shop for things online. I'm going to try that reseller. I'm going to try that one. No, that one has a higher price. Perfect. I'm going to go to this one over here with a lower price. And incidentally, all these companies leaving California, that is exactly what is going on. They're all leaving for Toyota's just up and left. Tens of thousands of jobs, poof, to Texas. Why? Low taxes, good standard of living, and it's a government that just works. You go to Texas and every road they actually pay for a road before they build it. So you'll be driving in Texas and they'll have these overpasses over just miles and miles of grass. That miles and miles of grass will someday be a freeway, but they're not going to build it until they've got the cash to pay for it. As a Californian, my mind is boggled by this. Because here, we believe in credit cards, don't we? Buy everything on credit. Yeah, so, well, anyway. So let's, when we get back here, let's talk about this minimum wage thing. Because there's something to be said. You got to understand the political implications of why liberals and why Democrats want a national minimum wage. And it's interesting to see who's pushing it. And then it's even more interesting to see who it affects the most. And the answer is going to surprise you. So back after this, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. You know, the minimum wage argument. I'll start with an example of where it screws people. And then we can kind of, we'll go take it back from there and look at the big picture. So in Chinatown, if you live in or near or around Chinatown, you'll remember that once upon a time you had a Walmart. Now, this Walmart came into place, and let's talk about this, because I want to actually talk to you if you don't live in Chinatown. Because if you're middle class, upper middle class, upper class, you probably don't shop at a Walmart, although you might. Certainly, in most states, I tell you, most states, Walmart is where everybody shops. In Orange County, where I live, we have a Walmart. I don't go in there, honestly. I don't. But you know. But I, what, how old was? Okay. I think I was 30, or maybe 31 when I first stepped foot in a real Walmart. So that's kind of embarrassing, isn't it? I think it was in Texas too. So it was pretty terrifying. It was a late night run in Texas, in Austin, Texas, and I went to a Walmart. And I might have had a nightmare or two afterwards. But nonetheless, this is something that people in the suburbs don't realize. And that is that if you are living in a more economically, an economically depressed area, if you're living in Chinatown, let's say, where do you buy your food? Well, you don't. You know, there are no Vons. There's not a corner Albertsons. You buy your food in little convenience stores, little bodegas. And these bodegas are notorious for price gouging. You know this? Yeah. So any good, for example, I read some statistics that things like toothpaste, any durable goods, things that can be stocked for a long period of time. Let's say aspirin, okay, toothpaste, potato chips, anything like that that has a longer shelf life. Three times what it would be at a Vons or an Albertsons. Now, why is that? These stores have a very captive consumer base. And this consumer base is held captive by the very poverty that surrounds them. They don't have transportation. They have to rely on public transportation to get around. Of course, when you go shopping, what's the last thing you want to do is you don't want to carry your stuff halfway across town. So what do you, where, yeah, you shop at the little bodega that's 3 blocks away. And the owners of that store know that. They charge simply what they can get. And I'll add to it too, and this is really, really mean sounding, but wealthier people more sophisticated people are more price conscious. So the irony is that you go into a middle class area and people actually look at what they're paying for stuff. They do. And the other thing to remember is a lot of people, you have their, and I, again, this is just, I'm telling it to you straight. People in the inner city, they've got their WIC cards and they've got their, it's just, they're using funny money. So at any rate, they've got really expensive groceries. They've got really expensive. And what do the people of Chinatown want? Well, if you were around a couple years ago, you'll remember that they wanted this store because they wanted to have a better variety of goods. They wanted cheaper goods, affordable goods. And so this Walmart comes into Chinatown and it is literally a godsend. Now, before you and all your Bernie Sanders friends condemn Walmart as a big evil corporation, understand this. They go into areas just like Chinatown where people of lower income people are getting fleeced by local small businesses. Okay, I'm just telling it to you straight. The Walmart goes in and undercuts everybody's price. Now, who benefits from that? Well, it's easy. A bunch of poor people get to keep more of the little that they have. Now, who am I to fault? How can there's nothing wrong with that? In fact, this is a public service. And so in around, what was it, 2013, middle of 2013, this Walmart opens up and it doesn't, not even a year later, stupid union-sponsored protesters show up, protest them for being, well, what do they say? They said Walmart's environmentally unfriendly. But the big thing is that these protesters were the first step that were fighting for the $15, the LA $15 minimum wage. And the minute that $15 minimum wage was enacted, guess what happened? The Walmart shut down. Walmart, the company, literally pulled the plug on this giant store that they had just built 2 years earlier because it was cheaper for them to shut it down and to walk away from their multi-million dollar investment than it was to pay their workers $15 an hour. It just was not economically feasible. And who did that hurt? It hurt the poor people. It hurt people that were making a minimum wage. And this is the great irony. When you take someone making a minimum wage and you raise their minimum wage, you think you've done a great thing. You've put an extra few bucks in their pocket. But I hate to break it to you, those dollars came from somewhere. Right? They didn't just, you know, in your fantasy land where you live, Bernie Sanders land, those dollars are real. They don't just get printed the way they do it down in Venezuela. Okay? Those dollars have to come from somewhere. And when you run a business, any given month, you've got a spreadsheet and there's money in and money out. And there's a pie. It's a zero sum game. So that cash has to come from somewhere. And that business has a choice. They either raise their prices or they're not making a profit, so they go out of business. So now every business, certainly every service industry is affected by minimum wage because most companies, well, McDonald's certainly, right? McDonald's, these convenience stores, any place is going to be affected by the minimum wage. And all of a sudden, if they want to stay in business, they've got to make that difference up. So what do? They raise prices. And now, let's take it a full circle. Those prices now all go up across the board. And the people that have, quote unquote, more money to spend now are forced to spend more money on the goods that they bought before, but they're more expensive. And so they might forego shopping for those goods. And so at best case scenario, they're in the same place that they were. Worst case scenario, it's a reduction in lifestyle. And at the expense of businesses, of a ripple effect of businesses across the board, going out of business, eliminating jobs that existed. And that's the dirty story here. That's the dirty story on the minimum wage. And it's very timely because let me tell you, LA, you know, with $15 an hour minimum wage. Now, California's jumped on the bandwagon too. Minimum wage went up, 50 cents this year. It's going to go up 50 cents next year. And then it's going to go $1 a year until 2022. And then it's going to be $15 an hour. Statewide. Tell me this. I mean, just throwing this out there. How is the job market in, let's say, Lompoc, anywhere close to what the job market is like in South Orange County or downtown LA? Now, I'm not picking on Lompoc. I'm just telling you it's a very different situation. Have you ever gotten in your car and driven across California, driven through the Central Valley? If it doesn't look like the neighborhood you live in, well, surprise, surprise, it's not. We are a very diverse state. And I specifically, relative to this topic, mean we are an economically diverse state. And in that, what's that expression? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. It's not like that. It's what's good for Lompoc. You know, what's good for LA might not be good for Lompoc. And that is exactly the argument, I think, taking it back to what Donald Trump is saying here. Donald Trump is saying, I'm not for a federal minimum wage because it's up to the state and localities to decide what's good for them. And let them fight amongst each other and compete. And that, he's not going to be turning states into apprentice contestants, although that could be fun. But what he is talking about is what's good in Indiana or what's good in Mississippi is not, you know, necessarily what's good for California and vice versa. And I'm going to take it even a step further. I'm telling you what's good in LA is not necessarily good in Fresno. Or even smaller areas. So this is where Trump's answer is spot on. And I'll tell you, you know, I'll tell you this. The minimum wage is just complete bogus. It's not just because of this Walmart story, but it's true across the board in America. The minimum wage, raising the minimum wage, does the most to hurt minorities and lower income people starting out in jobs. And I'm going to explain to you why. Hang in there. Quick break. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Okay, we're back. So, you know, are you in traffic right now? Are you driving? Can you imagine, hopefully this never happens to you, but you're driving along and bam, you get rear-ended. And you look... First things first, you're just in shock. And as you know, you pull over to the side of the road, maybe the police come, maybe they don't. You and the other driver exchange information, and they're so apologetic. They just keep saying, I'm so sorry I hit you. Here's my insurance information. Whatever you need from me, I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of. And you leave with that really warm feeling. You've just had a great interaction with the fellow American. And that's what you do. You call his insurance company and you say, hey, Bob ran into me, really sorry, you know, who's really sorry. And he told me you guys were going to take care of everything. And at that moment, welcome to hell. Everything that insurance adjuster is going to say and do to you is not to help you, is not going to in any way, shape, or form make you whole or make things right. And there are really two losers in that scenario, aren't there? Because it's not just you that gets the short end of the stick, but it's also the guy that really feels bad that they hit you. You know? He actually feels bad about it. And so, what do you do? What do you do? There's only one thing to do, and that is to call sweet James Bergner. Attorney James Bergner is an accident attorney. Now, it's more than that. He's somebody who really understands what insurance companies do and how they come about it. And he's very good at taking you and your case and making sure that you get exactly what you deserve. If you don't have somebody on your side, you will get taken advantage of. So what you need to do, if you or a loved one have been in an accident, don't hesitate. Don't wait. Don't talk to the other side. Don't even talk to your own insurance company before you talk to James. Call 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021 or visit www.sweetjames.com. Okay. Talking about the minimum wage and, well, okay. This whole thing, and it's not just an anecdotal thing about, we were talking about the Walmart that came into Chinatown, comes in. I'm sure it cost, a store like that must have cost $10 million to build. Easy. Okay, easy. And they pull out after 2 years, gone. Even though they were helping people in the community, providing low-cost groceries, low-cost foods, and other household items, even though it was helping everybody in that community, gone. And they're gone because the minimum wage went up. Now, I also talked about all the jobs that go missing, right? Because, well, there were a lot of, I'm assuming that store employed a lot of people. And it may not have met the standards of our do-gooding friends on the left, but those were real jobs and people were taking home real paychecks. And you know what? Here's the dirty secret about minimum wage jobs. Most of the time, it's a starting point. And this, so think about it. What are you making now? And were you ever paid minimum wage? It's a valid point. So I was thinking about all the crap jobs I had before I started my career. And the best, I'll tell you, when I went to UCI, I spent 3 years at UCI before I just pulled my hair out, couldn't take it anymore, and ended up graduating from Chapman. But So I went to UCI for 3 years and I worked for the school. And of course, this is again an example of liberal hypocrisy, because the school was exempt from paying minimum wage to its students. And so I was working in the library and I was making like $5 an hour, less than $5 an hour. I was making like $4.50 an hour. It was insane. And but the thing is even if, look, let's say there was no minimum wage and that was the going rate, I would have taken the job because I wanted a job. I wanted a job that job was flexible around my school. And it wasn't like working a food service job. I was working on computers and I thought, and I was right about it, to some extent, it was a resume builder. And so your first job is not your last job. And it's really, really important. And I'm such a believer in this. It's really, really important to create opportunities for people to start somewhere. And when you raise the minimum wage when you raise it, you actually end up pricing out risk. Employers, when an employer takes a chance on you, it's called risk. when an employer sees a kind of not that good, not that maybe not that developed, well, zero experience, maybe not quite polished person walk in, and that person is saying, listen, I'll work for minimum wage. Just give me a chance. Do you know how many success stories come from people who go in, palms up, and say, give me a job. I will do anything. I'm going to prove myself to you. And there's a Duke economist who makes a very good point here. And it's this guy named Michael Munger. And he talks about, you know, when you make it more expensive to hire low-skilled workers, because I give you that scenario, the poor kid that walks in and says, give me a job, take a chance on me. Now, imagine that the minimum wage is not $10 an hour, but it's what? It's 15. Now, if you're an employer, what are you thinking? Well, gosh, I used to have 5 positions that do this, but now I only have 3 because I've had to adjust my workforce. So I'm not going to take a chance on that person. I'm not going to, I don't, I, well, what does Munger say? It's interesting. He says, so who gets these jobs when you make it more expensive to hire low-skilled workers? Is it going to be that impoverished worker who might not be well-spoken, who doesn't have reliable transportation? Or hey, is it that well-spoken upper middle class teen who got a car at 16 and doesn't come with any transportation issues and already has a wardrobe ready to work and somebody you can put in front of customers? And that's a really important point to make, because I can tell you as an employer how many times I've taken a chance on people where I say, look, I'm not going to pay you very much money. Come in here and prove yourself. And 6 months later, they're getting a substantial raise because they've proven themselves. And there are people that have started. I'm in a little bit of a different industry. So I think the lowest that we've ever in our firm's history started anybody at is $12 an hour. And now we start people at 15. Now, but you know what? I'm going to be affected by the minimum wage. You might think I'm not, because we start people at 15. But that's not true, because the minimum wage will push up other starting salaries. It's going to happen. Well, my whole spiel here is you start at $15 an hour, minimum wage is at 10 something. So we are competitive. And I'm going to tell you, may I please tell you something as an employer? A college-educated, quote-unquote, a college-educated person with no grad school is not worth more than $15 an hour, because they are coming in the door with zero work experience, zero know-how. They don't know how to work a copy machine. They don't know how to answer a phone. They don't know crap. And I, for $15 an hour, it's basically an apprenticeship. I have to pay them to teach them how to do just about everything. All their college degree means to me is that they survived a rat race for 4 years. They figured out how to add drop classes. And, you know, until all this microaggression nonsense was coming out, I figure, hey, you know, maybe you grew a little bit of thick skin in college, which now even means less. So I say this because what is that $15 an hour person for me? And I pay $15 an hour now for an entry level person. What is that worth? And I got to tell you, it's not worth a lot. And we as a society want employers to take risks on our young, unskilled workers. We don't want people applying for jobs. What are the worst? If you're starting out, what are the worst words you can ever see on a help wanted ad? Experienced. Right? That's the worst word. Because you're looking at it going, well, hell, I don't have experience, but I want to get experience and I'm going to get it at this job. But you know what? If I went to this employer and I'd say to him, you know what? Pay me $5 an hour and give me 3 months and I'm going to prove to you that I'm worth 15. If I could make that bargain, if that weren't, it's illegal that the owner of that business cannot make that deal with you. Don't you think that's absurd? Because I know what I want for my kids. I sure as heck want someone to take a chance on them. And I don't want it to be because their dad is a well-known lawyer and radio talk show host. I want my kid to make it on his own. And my daughters to make it on their own. That's what I want. And that means that somewhere, sometime, at some point, they're going to be starting out from nothing. No experience. And that sure as heck is not worth $15 an hour. And I love my kids. I love them. But they're not going to be worth $15 an hour. Or the $22 an hour by the time, at the rate we're going, they're going to just, let's make it $30 an hour. Why not? It's insanity. So we'll talk a little more about this, but Trump has a new supporter, somebody big in California. And it's, I don't know, it might have been one of the guys that liked my Trump socks up in San Fran. I'll tell you who it is. Back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Yeah, you know, the last thing I'm going to say about the minimum wage is this. Every economist, even the CBO and people here in California have all said how you raise the minimum wage, you lose jobs, period. So I'm going to tell you why our friends on the left want a national minimum wage. Because they don't want a control to their crazy experiment. As long as there's a high national minimum wage, you can't point to another state that doesn't have a minimum wage and say, look at them. Look. It's working. I mean, we'd lose that argument. And so, it's the biggest, well, that's total hypocrisy. And of course it's that calculated. Don't be naive. They want it across the board because that way you don't have a state somewhere that can show how successful it is without one. And that's that, you know, I even saw this article back in 1984. The New York Times said, let's cut the hypocrisy, you know, cut the nonsense and kill the federal minimum wage. There's no reason for it. The New York Times. I digress. Well, what is going on? Oh, my goodness. Do we talk about all these Trump refugees? I think last week, last Saturday, we talked about all the people that are bailing on the country in the event that Trump becomes president. And it so happens that such has been the concern for these millennials. Millennials are, what's the statistic? Robbie, is it 49%? Well, so 49% of millennials may flee the U.S. in the event of a Donald Trump presidency. 18, well, yeah, good riddance, sayonara, and take all your participation trophies with you. So 18 to 29-year-olds would consider leaving the country, 49% of them, if Trump is elected. Yeah, you know what Trump says at his rallies? Get them out! That's right. Now, such a strong showing of unhappy and dissatisfied and perhaps soon to be relocating millennials that there is now a dating website. Yes, a dating website to match Canadians with Americans who are escaping the Trump presidency. Because Canada, as an immigration system, has a similar thing like us where, you know, if you get, you can get a green card if you marry someone in the country or who is a citizen. So this new website is offering to pair Americans with Canadian singles and give them a quick way of getting out of the country. Now, you know what I love about this is, first things first, this is so typically millennial, right? Let's get a shortcut. Oh, I know the shortcut. The shortcut is let's get into a sham marriage to get a green card. You know how hard my parents had to work to get a green card? You have any idea the kind of... It was insanity. First, my mom got it, and then my dad waited for a period. I mean, my dad didn't even have a work permit when they moved here, and he honestly abided by every law and didn't work. We lived below the poverty line back in Durham, North Carolina. That's right. Because, well, it's hard. So, of course, the millennials are looking for a shortcut, and this dating website is just the avenue for them. So what did, let's say, there's a guy who started it, Joe Goldman, says that 4,150 people have signed up for the site, and 70% of them have been Canadian. That's great news! If you're a millennial looking to bail, so far, the odds are in your favor of finding a suitable match. Now, to our Canadian friends listening, I have some good news for you. That number, 4,150, is not correct any longer. It is now at least 4,151. And that is because producer Robbie... and this is fresh off the presses, has signed up for Maple Match waitlist forum. Robbie, have you really done this? This is happening. This is real. Can I read your dating profile? Can I do that? So, well, I'll go through the form. You fill in your first and last name, your age, your zip code, give your email address, and then it gives you have to select your citizenship, American, Canadian, and other. And under American, there's in parentheses, it says, bless you. I don't know what that means. I am a woman, man, there's no other in this category, so that's interesting. And then it says, let's see, this is beautifully written in millennial speak. Because it says here, I'd like to shack up with a dot, dot, dot. And Robbie, I'm sorry, all you gents out there, Robbie has selected a woman. And then there's a little text box where you can, before I get to that, they're vetting you, right? They're vetting you. They want to see if you're even right for the site. And of course, you know, with a little bit of Googling, I'm sure, I hope you don't get rejected, Robbie. I hope you don't. Because here it says, how can we make Maple Match great for you? And this is what Robbie writes. I've already got a lumberjack beard, and I can learn to love hockey. Whistle Pig is my favorite whiskey, and the Canadian Dining Hall and Tim Hortons were my favorite place to eat when I was stationed in Kandahar, Afghanistan. Oh, this is the best ending here. I'd love to meet a nice, intelligent, socially conscious Canadian girl who does yoga and has neck down alopecia. So, can't make this stuff up. Unless you're Robbie, in which case you can make this stuff up. So, I guess what we'll do is, maybe next Sunday, will we do an update on this? Robbie, will you come back with... I'm hoping that by next week, you're all signed up and have some Maple Leaf babes waiting for you in your inbox. Yeah, I might have to. Well, or we'll produce the show out of Canada. No, I'd get. Are you kidding me? They'd kick me out for hate speech. They would. It'd be over. So, yeah. So what's you know? I don't know. Is this got any traction? Do you know? Did they say how much it would cost, Robbie? Did they? No. Ah, typical. You know, bait and switch. Probably cost nothing. You know, they got to attract the Bernie Sanders crowd. So, I got to tell you, speaking of Donald Trump and his supporters, switching it up a little bit, I was telling you last segment how there's a guy, there's very prominent supporter of Donald Trump's who's just been reported to be one of his delegates. And this guy, his name is Peter Thiel. Now, do you know him? Have you heard this name? Well, you've probably heard about the company he started. PayPal? Yeah, maybe. I think so. And you know, I'll tell you this. There's a show on HBO that is a must watch. And I think I might have talked about it before, but this show is called Silicon Valley. And is it in its third season now? Third season. And Silicon Valley is all about this startup company called Pied Piper. I'm not going to give anything away, but the point of it is that early in the first season, they land an investor, an activist investor. And his name in the show is Peter Gregory. But this Peter Gregory character is based on Peter Thiel. Okay? And things about Peter Thiel to know. So this guy's so smart. He got his BA and JD from Stanford, okay? Went there for undergrad and law school. He actually, did you see this thing about chess, Robbie? You know that he is rated a master by the U.S. Chess Federation. It's just kind of a hobby, you know, thing he does on the side. He's openly gay and has supported certain organizations such as GOP Proud, which is obviously a Republican organization supporting gay issues, and then the American Foundation for Equal Rights. He's also co-produced the satirical drama Thank You for Not Smoking. Thank You for Smoking. So what's the deal here? Well, he's a devout libertarian. He doesn't really care about social issues. He cares about limited government, and he cares about disrupting the status quo. I mean, this guy's, so he's really against education. And the Peter Gregory character in the show, in the HBO show, he's the one who's saying that, you know, somebody gets up, he's denouncing college education, and he gets out there and this guy shouts him down and says, oh, you know, the true value of a college education is intangible. And Peter Gregory gets up there and says, the true value of snake oil is intangible. Right. So he does that thing on the show, but it's all based on Peter Thiel. And so this disrupt the establishment guy is all in for Trump. He's going to be a Trump delegate. And I think he might be like the only person in the Bay Area who's voting for Trump. So, there you go. We'll follow up on this. We'll keep you posted. SamNation.com for all your needs. Visit us on Sam Nation Show on Twitter and Sam Nation on Instagram. And we will see you here next week. See you next Saturday. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.